Tune the Defense, the best podcast in the world. We're out here.
I keep saying Henry's a forward.
Richie, who's the best striker you've played against?
Henry.
God. And the fact that we are now taking our country and put our country on the map of world soccer, being the first African nation, the third world nation in the whole world to win an Olympic gold medal in soccer, you know, it was unbelievable.
If you're going to take the time to go and get a pig head and break my locker open and wrap my clothes in it, that's sending a different message to me.
I've had to protect my family from going out into the street because you'll have random people that just coming up and abusing them racially. Even some old school managers who are British, they still have the same racial undertones like the man in the street who they're trying to condemn.
Welcome everyone to our first podcast on the Ukrafut channel. My name's Adam, host of the Ukrafut 24 website. Very happy tonight to welcome Andrew Todos, host of Zorya Lugansk website and Twitter feed, the largest English language media outlet for Ukrainian football. We also like to welcome Vladimir Zverov, who is the host of Pro Football television show on OnePlus1, a prominent Ukrainian television channel. And finally, tonight we have Andrei Viktorov, who is a long-term supporter of Oblomberova FC. He has been following them since he was about 5 years old. Look forward to hearing all their opinions tonight.
All right, well, thank you everyone for joining us tonight. Hopefully this will be the first of what could be a monthly or weekly thing. We'll see how it goes. But we're all here to talk about Ukrainian football tonight because it's our passion. And I think it's probably been a good weekend for us to get started. Andrew, I was following your Twitter feeds on Sunday with the Dinamo game. What was your take? What actually happened to Dinamo on Sunday, in your opinion?
Bit of a mess, as has been Dinamo Kyiv for, you know, a good few seasons now. I don't think they had much of a game plan as per usual. It was more of a let's try and play through to Tsakhnov and then see what he can create. To be honest, they started off well and then they just completely collapsed. When Desna scored twice. Second half, a lot better. De Penna came on, who's arguably one of Dinamo's better players, but never starts for some reason. And yeah, they equalised. And then I think on the whole of the game, Desna got quite a deserved win because they were trying. They were going for it and they got the winner at the very end. And for once, there were no real serious refereeing decisions that impacted the game. So none of those excuses, in my opinion, in that match. Katerina Monzul was actually quite good.
I think she's one of the top referees around. What did you think, guys? Yeah, Vladimir, Andrei, what were your opinions on the game?
Well, with Dinamo Kyiv, it always goes back and forth, you know. And by the way, about this team, Vladimir created a great video on Football Hub, which he runs, apparently. I follow it for a couple of years now. They created a great video about after Dinamo Shakhtar game, they put a camera on the bench of Dinamo Kyiv.
Close to the subs bench.
Yeah, the subs bench, right. And they basically recorded everything what happened there. All the emotions, all the stuff. And you basically see every detail perfectly. How the team treats the coaching staff and how the coaching staff reacts to the team and which how do they run the team. Because basically the most, how you can picture that as the best way is when an overtime in basically before the penalties, the captain, Sidorchuk, says to the coach, just one substitution, just to save time. And the coaches say, we tried. We tried. That's all they could say. Well, that's the best picture I could tell of Dinamo Kyiv.
Just one short amendment. It was at the start of this season. It started this season when was this new coach of Oleksiy Mikhailichenko. So it's been this season. It was not long time ago. And now
it was a cup game Popov scored.
Yeah. This in October. If you ask me, Adam, in my opinion, I think the first and the biggest problem in the creating of the game, creating of the play of Dynamo Kyiv was in the style of play they trying to play. This style, this much powerful. So,
I think
tactics, and they effort a lot of job, in the pitch. Do you hear me? Yeah, and another side of the pitch. So they had to have the striker, but they don't have the quality striker now. And the guy who yesterday played is completely unusual now.
That's a beautiful debut. Beautiful debut. Got an own goal and got substituted in halftime.
Will he be back next week?
I'm not sure. I really hope we're losing to play.
Yeah, it's anyone's guess at the moment because Mykhailchenko, he's just pulling it out of the bag as he goes along now, by the looks of it.
Well, the thing is with their squad is that the most skillful, the most creative players are being held back. Like today's really well. He's got a bit of emotion, I know, but he can create. And same as with Duelund and Rusin and Shaporenko. I don't see those guys in the squad. And I ask myself why. And when I see how they play and when I see how the coaching staff runs the team, I have no questions at all. Like, it's they have this process of rebuilding the team, and basically they struggle hard.
But the biggest problem, in my opinion, is the central midfielders. This triangle, they can't find the best triangle for the Dynamo Kyiv now. And the players who played yesterday in the center of in the center of the field, especially Shepelev, they had a really bad game yesterday.
I think it's because the coaching staff still relies on wingers like Yarmolenko, like Tiganov and Verbic. They actually use Verbic as a center forward. Like, remember Conte used to use Hazard in his final season at Chelsea. Disgraceful season, but that's what we see again. It doesn't help.
Mm-hmm. Right, predictions. Are they going to get second place or will Zorya or Desna overtake them? Andrew, up first.
Oh, you know what? Even though I feel that it would be best if they didn't get there, just on the basis that it might force Sorkis to either replace Mykhailchenko with probably someone else from the school of Lobanovsky, or just you know, maybe see a difference there, but. You just look at the team right now, and you don't think that they'll bring any real strengthening in the summer either. So they won't do well in that Champions League qualifier regardless. So I think it might just be a bit of a learning curve if they don't finish second, and then might kick them up the backside. So I'm going to back... I don't know who's going to finish second, but I think Dynamo won't. That's my prediction.
Andre, predictions.
Well, as a representative of White Green Kyiv, I really hope not. But at the same time, I understand that Zorya and Desna are just not that good.
Yeah, fair enough. And Vladimir?
There's some problems with connection. I don't see you. I just see... Oh, now I see you. And, in my opinion, I think, and I told it a couple of times during the last months, I think the Dynamo will finish second because it will be the last 4 match days, it will be a battle of individual skills of Dynamo Kyiv and the style of team play of Zorya. I think the Desna will be fourth. So this will be challenge between individual skills of players of Dynamo Kyiv and the team play of Zorya. And I think if something went wrong with the tactics again, if something went wrong with the Mikhailichenko tactics again. I think the Dynamo Kyiv players can get the game in their own hands and win by their individual playing.
Mm-hmm. I've got to back Zarya as well. I think it's sort of heart over head time, and I would love to see Dynamo not make second spot as well, just because it would shake up the establishment. I think when I think back, correct me if I'm wrong, was it 2013 when Dnipro or Metalist finished second and Dynamo?
Yeah, Metalist.
And it really gave them a shake then, woke them up, and they won a couple of leagues back to back then. So I think for the benefit of Ukrainian football in particular, I think Dynamo, a third place Dynamo might get things better for the future. Anyway, onwards we go to the news coming out of Lviv today, the sad news regarding Kapati, depending on our take. Did you all manage to see that today?
No, unfortunately not. I was out of town. What happened?
Okay, I'll let Andrew fill you in because he broke the story to me earlier today with the news about Kapati Lviv.
Yeah, sure. So this morning, Oleg Smilichuk, the new co-owner of Kapati, revealed that the club don't have enough finances to continue the remaining fixtures this season. So it's likely that the club is going to fold or just stop playing in the UPL from tomorrow, because that's the deadline for their UPL license renewal, and they've got $5 million in debt. And also something that was quite new to me was it was revealed that the co-owner of Karpaty is Ihor Kolomoisky, apparently. And he is unwilling to, he's unwilling to communicate with Smilichuk, apparently. And as such, they haven't been able to come to an agreement to pay the debt off 50-50, like their stake in the club's workout. So looks like quite a sad time in Lviv.
Really does. Vladimir, I don't know if you can add anything else there to it. Did you hear anything today?
First of all, Andrew said that he didn't know about 50-50 stakeholders of Karpaty. Yeah. This is a story we told about the months ago in our TV show, in the Pro Football TV show. Yes, this is the story, like the 15, since 2010, it was like 10 years, it was like 50% the company close to Kolomoisky and 50% of Karpaty's company close to Dominski. And in the 2010, when Kolomoisky, the company of close to Kolomoisky, bought 50% of Karpaty from Dominski, so Dominski was the 100% owner. So was one owner. And then 10 years ago, company close to Kolomoisky bought 50%, and Kolomoisky put 35 million of euro into the Karpaty, into the infrastructure, into the training camp, into the players. And then he didn't give any money. So 10 years ago, he gave 35 million of euro. But then things that were in Karpaty, some people didn't use his money like it should be used, not for the training camp, and he asked then, where is my money, but money was money where disappeared. And then after this, Kolomoisky didn't give any money to Karpaty, and now So the Smilichuk, like in the news, yeah, we read that Smilichuk was bought 50% of Karpaty, but I don't know, and we don't know who's staying behind them. And I'm not sure I'm not sure if Smolichuk is a real co-owner of Karpaty. Oh. And now, yes, that's true. Karpaty, they don't have money because Dominski lost his interest a couple of years ago. You know, he's not in Ukraine. He's hiding from the police somewhere in the world, and he don't give any money to Karpaty. And so now no one gives any money to Karpaty, and this is natural process. Karpaty is dying. They are dying.
But the question is now, are they going to finally merge the three Lviv clubs, Ruch, Lviv, and Carpathians, like Kozlovsky plans, I guess? Maybe Kozlovsky, it's his time to step in.
What do you think, gents? How are they going to solve the problem of football in Lviv? Anyone?
I don't know. I think the problem of Karpaty will not be solved. Maybe, in my opinion, the Ruch and Karpaty, they are like making the one club or something like this.
Yeah, that's
maybe
what I'm
they will make.
What's your take on it, Andrew?
Yeah, I mean that would seem like. Absolutely. Yeah, that sounds like the most sort of plausible solution, because at least there's a stable financial backer in Kozlovsky, it seems, for now, anyway. And the project at Ruch looks quite good. And you probably wouldn't put it past him to take quite a few of those Karpaty players, regardless, next season, if they do, you know, once the club folds, because of obviously the close proximity. But I've heard the rumours today that maybe after they fold, they'll just do a Phoenix club, like maybe Karpaty 1 or Karpaty 1963 sort of thing. Is that potential, Vladimir?
I'm not sure about this because, the club Karpaty, they have a real great academy. Lot of great players came from they play in the Saturday against FC Lviv. There's 90% their own, the players from their own. And I think the best solution is to save this academy and maybe join some club, another club to save the brand. To save the brand of Karpaty, because the brand is the most powerful in the Western Ukraine.
Yeah,
definitely. Should I? When I was over in Lviv in December, I couldn't quite get my head around the lack of support from Arena Lviv. When I heard the quotes for rental fees there and the amount of money they seem to want to swallow up from the clubs, It took me a while to realise that, does Lviv, the regional government there, do they want successful football in the region? Do they want to build a big club to rival Dynamo and Shakhtar over there? It's very questionable given the lack of support that they're getting at the top. I don't know who owns Arena Lviv, but they're not helping at all, as far as I can see. What do you think about it? I heard a figure was quoted of around 400,000 hryvnia a game for Karpaty or FC Lviv or Ruch if they want to use the stadium. And they're paying around 100,000 hryvnia for the year at Stadium Ukraine.
I don't know the correct number of maybe it can be the you said, because the Dynamo Kyiv they rent an Olympique for the 50,000 and for example Zorya, they rent in the stadium in Zaporizhia, it's like 115,000. It might be the number you go.
It's definitely from what I've seen over the last few weeks, I'm going to touch on this in a second, but there's a desire in Lviv for a football team amongst the people from the region, but it's questionable if the sort of the facilities and the backing is there at the moment for it to be a success.
If we have interest in Lviv for the football, the last couple of years it went down. And one of the reasons, one of the biggest reasons, is the stadium, Arena Lviv, is far from the center of the city, and it's really difficult to get it by the public transport. So, and if you use a car, it's always big traffic there, and it's inconvenient to come to the stadium. And people in Lviv, they prefer to stay in the center, make some cup of coffee, and then go to the football.
Yeah, absolutely.
I can confirm that.
Yeah.
I think we all agree it's got very nice coffee in the centre, so we can't criticise anybody who takes that decision. However, we did see, and also I was hoping Yuri would be here today. Obviously, Yuri's a prominent journalist up in Lutsk region in particular, and we saw the game on Saturday in Lutsk, and how many fans were there on top of, on the rooftops, had travelled up from Lviv for the game?
Looks about 20 of them, probably in total. I'm not sure whether there were any more on any other different buildings, but yeah, potentially the last game in the top flight for a while or ever. So they saw that. They have to cherish that moment.
Should they... should they be letting the grounds? Should we be opening up the stadium to these guys or not at the moment? And they're obviously not observing social distancing. We're seeing lots of people stood together outside of grounds. Now, why not open the gates? We all know that attendances at the moment in Ukraine are not the greatest. So if people want to spread out, they certainly can. But why not?
Yeah, I mean, obviously I'm... Oh, go for it.
Go on, Vova. Vladimir?
Yeah, I just watched, talking about the social distance, I just watched the Persha Liga game of Minai against Ingulets. They were playing the village of Minai, and then was a big, big chain of fans around the stadium, the fans, cars, and no, the distance between them was like the half of meter.
Oh, this.
It was just like in the cup game with Dynamo. There was no such distance.
They were much more, and they were using the ladders. So the one guy came from the ladder to the up of the car and sitting on the up of the car.
People getting creative.
Yeah.
Well,
we've seen the pictures from Desna the last 2 weeks with the Zorya game and the Dynamo game where the guys have hired the cranes to stand over that.
You know, the renting of the one crane is in the Chernigov is cost around 4,000 of hryvnia. So it's a kind of 100 pounds.
Wow.
Now, this is something that was new to me when I moved out to Ukraine. Maybe, I don't know, Andrei, you could explain a bit more. There's the supporters here give out awards amongst their supporters for people who attend every game during the season. Is that correct? Some kind of gold medal?
Oh, yeah. There's this thing called the golden season. When you travel for all the away games, when you visit all the away games and home games in every tournament, cup, league, Euro Cup, anyway, you receive a golden season title. And sometimes there's also a kit or a scarf or even a beer, like our fans did last season. So it depends. Yeah, but it's a good thing.
And Obelon, do you get many people achieving the golden season?
Yeah, we have a couple. We have a couple for sure. We have actually the debate on between a couple of fans who's traveled more and who really deserves the golden season and stuff. What's going on?
And I mean, Hank, this is something that I always want to try and stress when I'm like communicating with the English audience in particular. It's like, how many hours actually go into traveling around this country if you're committed to your team? I mean, we're talking for some teams, it's probably 2-3 days on the road, would you say, to get to matches?
Well, if you go to Mariupol by train, I think it's 15 hours or something. I might be mistaken.
So the one, I know one guy, he has a golden season as a Dynamo Kyiv fan. And he went from Kyiv to Mariupol using just only suburban trains. Pay any money.
Wow.
And he was he had six or seven different trains, and it was 2.5 days. The traveling was 2.5 days.
Wow, that was impressive.
Commitment.
we were talking about Rook earlier, and I was at the Ivano-Frankivsk Rook game at the end of the autumn season. It was the last game before the winter break. And I met one of the Ivano-Frankivsk ultras, and they just done a trip to Avangard-Kramatorsk. And they said it took them about 4 to 4 days there and back on the trains. And they did take the night trains. I think they took a train up to Kiev and then down to Kramatorsk from there. Sadly, they lost as well, but I think they had a great day anyway. But yeah, it's some of the effort that the supporters go to here is absolutely incredible. And you're saying, where are Obolon playing tomorrow? You said you've got a couple of guys are going to Lutsk for the match.
Yeah, they're definitely going.
They're definitely going. And what was the story with Lutsk last week with the game at Chornomorets? Anyone?
Well, the guys gave an interview. The Volyn players gave an interview, and their captain said that they weren't thinking that much about the game, but about the tests, the coronavirus tests.
Am I correct? Somebody said after the game they tested positive or something like that.
No, I'm not sure about that.
Maybe it was my mistake.
Maybe I try to explain, in my opinion, what is happening with Volyn all through to. They had a draw in the Mykolaiv, so the team, they should win, yeah, but they have a draw. Also, Minai, they completely lost second half today. So, in my opinion, the teams, Ruch, Minai, and Volyn, 3-4 teams, they were sure that the championship will finish, and they're gonna go to the Premier League, and they just, the players relaxed. And last 2 months, the players relaxed, and now they can't play like if they had to play. And the Volyn central defenders, they made the biggest mistakes, a lot of big mistakes, and they lost. They conceded 5 goals.
Should the first division be back? You know, I've heard a lot of rumors about the reasons why they're playing the Persha Liga. Well, what do you think? Should we be playing it? Should these guys be back? I know my friends Stan at Balkany have said there's been a lot of financial implications of coronavirus and the extended break and the lack of revenues coming into the businesses in Ukraine, making these guys play, especially the lower league, the bottom half teams. Could push some of them out of business.
In my opinion, for the teams like Balkany, also other teams, not the leaders of the league, yeah. The extra budget of after this coronavirus, extra budget for the test, for the like new life, is around 7%. So the teams like Balkany, they have the budget 10 million in hryvnia. And to find 700,000 is for them is big problem. Mm-hmm. So the team, like, from the first six, it's not a problem for them. They went to the Premier League. They should have this money. And the teams like Balkany, they didn't have. They don't have. That's why they didn't want to play.
Yeah, for Chikazi as well, there's talk that Chikazi may not see out the season. I think they're talking about forfeiting some games as well at the moment. It's very questionable for me. As an Obolon supporter, what's your take on it? Are you happy that Obolon are playing, or?
Absolutely, yeah. It's been 7 months, basically. But the thing is, we have to finish this top of the league fight between almost seven, I think six teams are very close, and each match is like a battle for 6 points. So this top six has to be dealt with. Concerning the other teams, well, yeah, we know their motives, we know the situation, they're not interested. Well, I guess they should have restarted the Persha Liga as like a top six clash between the top six teams, and that's it. But they restarted in whole terms, so that's their take on it.
Yeah.
What do you think, Andrew?
Yeah, I mean, the fact that you guys and all of Persha Liga hasn't played in 7 months, as you said, is going to always have an impact on, you know, being able to come back and be fresh and all that. And I mean, you know, Rukh were quite comfortable at the top, even though it was only by a point or something, but everyone still was expecting them to be promoted. But then, you know, they've had two manager changes just randomly before that before the restart, and you just don't really know what's going on with the club there, realistically, in sort of that managerial standpoint. But yeah, I agree. I think it probably would have been more logical to just do like a mini tournament with those six, seven teams. Maybe everyone start on zero again and just play each other, you know, because everyone was basically level on points or however it was. And then that might have made it fairer, because obviously these are unique times, so you could have made unique circumstances for that. But it looks like we're going to carry on until the end now, and some clubs unfortunately might pay the price.
That's the bit that scares me. I mean, as someone that's watched a lot of the third tier, the second division, we've got the kind of farcical situation that Allianz and Veres in September will play their first matches in 10 months in a promotion playoffs against teams that have finished the season in the first division. So they're going to be coming in completely cold against guys who've played, as you've got, what, 12 games? Is it 10 games to finish off the season? So...
yeah,
it's I sort of feel very, very bad for Allianz. I know I've invested a lot of money over there in Sumy region to try and get football going again. And Veres, it's close to my own heart, and I know they're doing a lot of good things in Rivne to try and get football up and running again over there. So, I'm very curious, and I'd love to know your opinions on what will be the shape of Ukraine, you know, sort of Ukrainian football, especially at the professional standard. Will there be enough teams to play to have three divisions next year? Will it get whittled down to two? Obviously, with Karpaty, there's a good chance that they won't be back next season. So there was a discussion today about how's that going to balance out. In the top division, will they promote four from the first tier and relegate none, or will it get balanced out another way there? There's a lot of things to sort of consider with it. Some of the second division teams won't be back. Obviously, we've got reserve teams in the second division as well. Sort of what shape do you see it taking on in the long term? Will there be enough teams for three tiers or not? I suppose that's the first question to answer. Now, will there be enough professional teams for three tiers, or will it go down to two tiers for a season?
If we're talking about the high division, the Premier League, it should be in teams the next season. Talking about the Ukrainian Football Association, it could be everything in the middle of the season. They can cut the tournament to the eight teams or six teams if they want. But talking about the regulation they wrote before, it should be 14 teams. And you know, like in Ukrainian football, you can never relegate. You just relegate when you finish in your life, when you football. like with Karpaty. So three teams they gonna promote, and a couple of teams they gonna promote to the Premier League. They want to make 18 teams to make bigger the first division. And talking about the second division, I know the couple of teams from Kharkiv, from Kharkiv region, from the agriculture regions of Ukraine, like Ingolets or Alian. They have three or four teams. They want to go to the professional, from amateurs to professionals. So I think the second division, it could be in the same level like this season. So 24, 25 teams.
Okay. Anything you want to add? I know you guys are more focused on the top divisions there, but
yeah, just a couple of remarks there. If we talk Premier League, I'm a huge fan of Belgium tournament, like this model they're using now in Ukraine. It's good. If we proceed more narrowly, more closely to the Belgium format, it would be good. If we talk about lower divisions, the situation we have in amateurs nowadays, that former star players from Premier League, veterans, they join those small-time agricultural middle-class business teams, and they're being financed really well. I mean, the numbers are massive. And they're just playing for fun on those fields. It's not the pitch. It's a field within the oblast and somewhere in the farm and stuff. They use these fields basically to play football, and they're having fun and enjoying it. And if more of such teams come to professionals, it would be lovely. It would be just like a conference or League One, League Two in England or something. It would be sweet.
I think there's definitely enough scope for teams like that around the country to turn professional, which, you know, from where I sit as a Brit, you know, it's one of the big successes in England has been the ability for the smaller teams and smaller towns to have that professional representation. And I would love to see more of the amateur teams turn professional here as well. I don't know, Andrew, anything you want to add or you?
Yeah, no, I completely agree with that, in the sense that I think we do need more sort of representation from the smaller cities and towns in Ukrainian football anyway, because, you know, currently, as you can see, the majority of the bigger sporting landscapes dominated by the east of the country.
Yeah.
And it would be good. It would just be good to have sort of a more balanced, approach. But obviously that's got its own economic repercussions and that sort of thing. But it's all going to depend on how hard Ukraine's actually going to be hit, I guess, by coronavirus in terms of the economic repercussions. And we don't really know that yet, probably until start of next year for its real impact.
I was happy to see that the regional tournaments have started again. So Kyiv Oblast is into its third round of games this weekend, and I'm off to Sumy, I think, very soon, so hopefully Lukiv will be at home so I can go and catch a game actually in the stadium there, or from from the road on the just outside instead. Right, we're gonna change that.
You guys, yeah, I'm changing my position. This is the first one. You guys should come to Ukraine, and I will show you the all colors of the amateur football in Ukraine. So the oldest region championship, and it's the for me, honestly, it's the best football in the world because this is the real football.
Totally agreed.
100%, 100%. Yeah, I absolutely love it. We went, sorry to digress, when we went to Shoska, when they lost 8-0 to Glukiv in October, it was very one-sided, but it was so great to see all the old guys from the town come and just sit on the benches, chatting away, shouting a few words of abuse at the players when they came close enough. And they didn't care that they'd lost 8-0, but it was a fantastic day. And so, yeah, everyone was just enjoying it. It was great just to see those local communities. And I've got to say, I was surprised. One thing that really surprised me, I mean, we're talking 60 kilometres probably between Glukiv and Shoska. And there was probably about 50 or so supporters from Glukiv had done the journey over for their, you know, the local regional championship game, which was all credit to them. So, especially in the smaller regions, there's a lot of passion at that level.
That's true.
For the game. So it should be promoted. Right then, I want to get on to our dear friend Keith Hackett, and big thank you to him for what he did, and the role of VAR in Ukrainian football. How is that? We've had a few controversial moments, Dinamo Kolas last week in particular. What went wrong with it, or what has gone right? Shall we go what went wrong? Because we've got plenty of time to fill.
First of all, the kid is not the first foreign referee we're asking to comment Ukrainian war. The first one's won a couple of weeks ago when Zorya, they play with Dynamo Kyiv, and Zorya lost at home, and was a couple of controversial decisions, especially the yellow or red card to Dynamo Kyiv Kinjora, and the handball of the Dynamo Kyiv defender Popov, where the referee didn't whistle the penalty. And we asked Italian referee, he was the previous Serie A, the former Serie A referee, he was in the Serie A like 15 years ago, and he told us about the moment. He resumed for us all the moment. And this week we had in the Monday the game Dynamo Kolas. We made the big studio after this when we discussed it with the pundits the things we saw and the work of the referee. But then the next day, I decided to ask another foreign referee, like for the international opinion, yeah? Because I saw the explanation of the Ukrainian referee committee and the head of Luciano Lucia, and the explanation was all four penalties in that game were correct. And I asked Mr. Hackett, Adam was helped me to contact Mr. Hackett, and he was very pleasure with me, and he was very kind, and made the wide explanation, the wide resume of the moments, and two penalties, one for the Dynamo Kyiv and one for the Kolas. By his words, it were incorrect, and Mr. Hackett was the hero of our yesterday's Sunday program.
So, do you think? Maybe someone could explain how is it being used here, and how does it differ to how it's been used, for example, in England? Or I know the use of it in the Premier League has been quite controversial.
I'm watching a lot of games of the English Premier League, and also I'm commenting the German Bundesliga at Megogo in Ukraine. So I'm watching almost every game of the German Bundesliga, and referee. They asking the VAR referees, asking by the ear, but they never go into the monitor. They believe the referee in the VAR. In Ukraine, the referee in the field the referee on the pitch and the referee on the VAR, they didn't believe, they didn't trust to each other.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why they watching a lot of moments and the time is passing by and they can't get some decision.
Okay. Will that be resolved? Is it an issue of trust between the referees or is it a technology issue?
I think it's just a question of the people, not technology, the human.
Okay.
Correct me if I'm wrong, Vladimir, but I think the only referee I can recall watching the VAR all the time, not trusting their assistants, is Monzu. Because Boyko, in this Dynamo Colors game, he trusted Aronofsky on plenty of episodes, which was controversial because Aronofsky was from Kiev. And he basically...
In this game, yeah, I agree. But the previous game, especially Monzo, they didn't trust each other. So I think it's not the question of Monzo or Boyko. I think this is the question of Ukrainian system of refereeing. So they didn't trust each other. And maybe there's something not trustable between them, like usual.
Has VAR improved the decision-making, though, at all? Have there been any controversial moments that VAR has helped solve? Because I think what we're seeing now in England is that more of those tight decisions are going the right way. And I was watching Sheffield United against Arsenal at the weekend, and there were two goals for Sheffield United. They're both offside. VAR tidied it up really quickly. Nobody could argue against it. And the first one of those in particular, it was quite tight. It was a difficult decision, but yeah, the VAR cleared it up quite well. Do you think it's helping in Ukraine that way?
I think in Ukraine, the referees, they can't use the VAR in the right way. They always, they can't make the decision to take responsibility. They can't take responsibility to themselves. And they're using this VAR. I think they are ready to use the VAR every minute.
So
in my opinion, when they started to use the VAR in the European football, I was asking myself, so is I for VAR or I against this one? And I think the VAR is great. But I think for me, is one team should ask one time to watch the VAR, one time in the match.
Mm. Like some limit
for the referees or for the teams.
Yeah, challenges like in tennis.
Yeah,
like this, like or volleyball.
Yeah, yeah, and no, I agree. That would be a good idea if they could add that in. But just on the subject of Ukrainian VAR compared to even Bundesliga and Premier League, I've been watching a fair bit of all three of them over the past few months and weeks, and it looks like every time there is some sort of controversial, just a foul or something, there's always some sort of need to look at the screen, or it takes about 5 minutes for the referee to actually engage what is going on. Like I think in the Kolos match when Verbić, I think, slipped, or he fouled, and I think Boyko was going to give the penalty and then he didn't in the end. But I mean, the whole process of how it took about 5 minutes or so for him to actually come to that decision, when it was quite easy for the VAR referee to just say, no, that's not, it's like, what's the point of having that VAR referee in there at all? Other than to say that. So yeah, I think it's definitely going to be some sort of trust issues, or there's going to have to be some sort of reform in the Ukrainian referee association, which obviously is unlikely.
That's a good point, by the way, Andrew. That's a good point, because that leads me to one question. Is the technology that good? Can it deliver? Can it provide in Ukraine as well as it does in England and Germany? Probably Volodymyr can answer this question, because he probably knows better.
I think the technology, there's no problem with the technology, because I was talking a lot of time with a man who working at the war, I mean the technical workers, and it's everything great, everything clear for them. But in the meantime, the referees using this war and watching the 5 minutes, the episode, they shouldn't watch.
Yeah.
Are there plans for it to go to the first division? It's not being used in Persia Liga, is it, at the moment?
Well, as far as I'm concerned, they have a broadcast of Persia Liga on TV, but I'm not sure about VAR. I'm not sure, but maybe you guys know more.
Today was the one of the hottest game at the rest of the season. So Minai were playing against Ingolet, and there were no VAR. And the referee was the main hero again. He's shown 10 yellow cards, one red card. The one player of Ingolet at the 3rd minute has slipped. It was a crazy rain, you know, like crazy rain. And was the game were delayed at the 25 minutes. And because it was everything wet and rained. And the player of the Ingolet at the 3rd minute, he slipped. He slipped and made the fall against the defender. But he just slipped. He wasn't he was nothing bad for the player. And the referee showed the yellow card. It's crazy. And there were no VAR. So I think the Persia Liga, they won't use the VAR. Maybe some, I don't know, maybe this will be the last match day. And the two teams, they will decide and they participate in the Ukrainian Premier League, and then they will use the VAR.
It'll be good to see in the long term. I mean, it's one of those medium-term developments to bring it out into the First League. Once they get it right in the Premier League, there's no point taking a bad product and enforcing it everywhere around the league. Right. Got one last little thing to talk about tonight, which is it's been proving very popular on Twitter. But it was something that Andrew you raised yesterday, and it got quite a lot of debate going. So I'll let you introduce the topic.
Yeah, absolutely. So I just sort of want to maybe start a little debate, guys, about what your thoughts are on the design of the UPL trophy and the Ukrainian Cup, and whether it's time for a redesign or revamping of it. Because I was watching Shakhtar lift the trophy and I just thought, this is just so Soviet type looking thing that you would see on oligarch's mantle fireplace.
Just a couple of words, because when I watched this trophy, the same time, like when the Piatov has lifted this trophy, I showed this trophy, and I remember how it looks like, and I say, wow, this is like from the Ming Dynasty, you know, from the Chinese, the 14th century.
Absolutely. And the issue that I had with it was I wanted to find out whether this is just a trophy we have had, well, the UPL has had since the very start in 1992, but it isn't. They used some other rubbish trophies, and then I don't even know when they brought this one in, because there's so little detail as when it first debuted, but it was definitely in the 2000s. So there's not even any historical relevance or some sort of attachment to having something so old. I just presume that it was people in FFL at the time, they thought, oh, this looks really good because this is how my house looks with my gold-plated mirrors and toilets, etc. And they thought this would be nice to have in my somewhere on display. And I just think it just needs some sort of modernization. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I agree with you because it's this trophy. I don't know. Can I call this trophy? This trophy looked like some archaeologist is digging up the cup and say, "Hey, come on,
yeah,
take it. Please. I'm a football fan. Take it, please."
Yeah. So I'm all open. Similarly, I know that a lot more people are quite happy with how the Ukrainian cup looks. But in my opinion, it's not actually a cup, which sort of grates with me because you can't hold it properly. And that is similarly, there's some wooden finger on the base and it's slightly... So I just, you know, I'm sort of open for maybe some sort of modernization of both of them. But I had on Twitter, for example, there was a lot of sort of communal agreement with the UPL trophy, but Ukrainian Cup people were happy to keep. I don't know what your guys' opinions are, so I'm opening the floor.
Well, as I recall, the UEFA Cup, the Europa League Cup, it doesn't have any holders as well, so you can't probably hold it as good. It's just a vase, basically, right?
Yeah.
And concerning the Premier League Cup, our Ukrainian Premier League Championship Cup, I recall the one with the giant one with the lady. Is it the one now?
Yes, that's the Ukrainian Cup. That's the...
Oh, the Ukrainian Cup with the lady on it.
Yeah.
It's like motherland or something. Oh, okay. Yeah, it's massive.
Lady is the cup and the... A couple of years ago, the Premier League redesigned the Super Cup trophy.
Yes, that's
This looks like modern.
Yes, and that's what that and that's the example I used myself. I thought that because the Super Cup in the 2000s was one of the worst things I've ever seen. It was like something in a old grandma's vase or something like that back in the day. And thank goodness they changed that. But I mean. You know, obviously, it's not probably the priority of a lot of things currently else going on in the Ukrainian football. But I just thought it was, especially with the Ukrainian Association of Football and even the Favbet Liha, with their sort of a new branding, trying to be more modern with their logos and, you know, their posters and all that sort of thing. Why don't they upgrade that as well, if you know what I mean?
I think we need to get you over to Kiev into the marketing department. <That's really great. laughs> Definitely, definitely. Perhaps there'll be a segment appearing on Pro Football in the next couple of weeks where we're looking for new designs of the UK.
I'd love that. Put the thought into people's brains and hopefully it'll work out.
There we go. But you do, you go to say you've got a very valid point. You've got a cup there that isn't a cup. And I did have a look at the pictures of the presentation and it is so Sovietica. And it's due a change. It really does. So hopefully somebody will be listening to this when it goes out and we'll take that on board.
Fingers crossed.
Fingers crossed. All right then, gents. Well, I've got to say a big thank you from me for your time tonight. I've really enjoyed this.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah. I hope you have too.